Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
It is 4 minutes after the hour, and we are here for you. Good morning. This is Bill Arnold. I have confidence in you. Go do what God has called you to do. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us be glad and rejoice in it. Here's a woman who's rejoicing in New York. All right. This is going to be a tough story to believe. But down in the dumps over her missing wedding rings, a New York woman never thought they'd be found. Here's what she did. She told the New York Daily News that she wrapped her rings in a paper towel after cleaning them, and somehow the rings ended up in the trash. So New York City Sanitation agreed to hold off on pickups so Lombardo, this woman, could look through her building's trash, but it was too late. The trash had already been carted over to New Jersey. But that was okay because New Jersey workers went through the New York garbage and found her rings. The New York sanitation crew says the trashy work is just part of the job. I would like to hire these people to come live at my house. Say, where are my car keys? Can you find them? Go find my car keys. I think it'd be actually very helpful. All right, one Crayola crayon is set to be retired. The Crayola crayon will no longer be in the box of 24 crayons. Let me pray for a moment. Dear Lord, let it not be periwinkle. That's my thought. I don't want it to be periwinkle. All right, here's a 12-year-old boy from Alaska is celebrating a dubious honor. Connor Slocum has taken top honors at the annual Rotten Sneaker Contest. Slocum defeated contestants from across the country who brought their foulest-smelling footwear to Times Square in New York. His parents must be proud. I got nowhere to go with that one. Anyway, today is National Mom and Pop Business Day, and how timely that I have Bill English in studio with me. We're going to talk about, he's from BibleandBusiness.com, and we are going to talk about small business news. So we'll take a short break. It's 6 minutes after the hour, and we will be back with Bill English. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Good morning. Bill Arnold here with Bill English in studio, BibleandBusiness.com. The foundation of building a business.
Yes.
I think Proverbs 24, verse 3 to 6 says something about that.
It does.
What does it say?
It says, by wisdom a house is built, and through understanding it is established. Through knowledge its rooms are filled with rare and beautiful treasures. Verse 5, the wise prevail through great power, and those who have knowledge muster their strength. So surely, Proverbs says, you need guidance to wage war, and victory is won through many advisors. So what do you see there? You see things like knowledge, understanding, wisdom, guidance, advice, all being foundational to building a house. That's what this says. Now, house here in the Hebrew means literally a dwelling place for one or more families. I think you can legitimately spread this to organizations in general.
But it's a great principle just if you're building a home just yourself.
Yes.
Just organizing your home and carrying out your own home life.
Yes.
This is a good advice.
So if you are a family-owned business, you need these things both to build your family and to build your business.
Okay. Now, you had an observation yesterday in a meeting that, like, the lights went off in your head.
They went on, actually.
They went on.
Briefly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you caught me on that one.
Yeah.
So talk about what happened when they went on.
Yeah, well, what happened when they went on was that I was I felt this rush of sanity, and it was really unusual.
For me,
yeah,
of course.
I feel better.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm so happy for you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
you know, you're such a loving guy.
I am.
You know?
I'm there for you, Bill. Go
Are
ahead.
You really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You bet I am.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. So, I was talking with a business owner yesterday, and his business has grown from 100,000 in 2015 to $250,000 last year. He's going to be about $500,000 this year.
Nice.
Next year, he probably will be $1 million or more.
Okay.
And so I'm talking to him and I'm saying, you know, here's kind of the groups that you need to be thinking about interfacing with as you're growing, because you didn't need them 2 years ago. And 3 years from now, you are definitely going to need these groups and you need to be building them. And then the words just kind of came out of my mouth and I thought, oh my heavens, I need to write this down. And then I thought, after I wrote it down and I did my blog post yesterday on it, I thought, well, this would be a good topic for this morning. And so, really, business owners need to interface with three groups, a management team, a team of advisors, and then a board of directors.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to throw a fourth group in there, you can. It would be your core customers. And so when you look at the three groups of people that a business owner needs to interface with on a regular basis, if you divide it up into the management team, the board of directors, and their trusted advisors, then you will have pretty much nailed it. And if you want to add in the core customers, now you've got a full-time job.
Bill, can I suggest another one? What about listening to your employees? What if I'm driving to work right now and I'm an employee and I just heard this and I'm thinking, oh, I guess my opinion doesn't matter?
Yeah, I wouldn't put it that way.
Okay.
I can see the logic in your question, but what I would say to that is that when your business hits a certain size, and let's say maybe it's 15, 20 million, yeah, you're going to be listening to the employees, but it's going to be in a different manner than how you did it when your business was $500,000 or $1 million.
Okay.
The reality is business owners will walk around their shop floors, their manufacturing floors, their offices, and they'll talk to as many people as they can, as often as they can. But they know in their guts they're not getting the full truth. And so what I always tell business owners is that they have to have systems that surface numbers and other information to them that either confirm what people are telling them or that contradict it. And so then they know that they have something to go investigate.
Mm-hmm. Not to stay on this subject, but what if I'm an employee and I want to tell my boss the truth, but it might cause too much trouble for me? And I just think it's easier just to keep my mouth shut.
There's a lot of people like that, and they tend to keep their mouth shut. I would need to know more about the situation to answer that hypothetical. What I would say in general is that business owners who value the truth will highly value employees who give them the 100% of the unvarnished truth.
Mm-hmm.
So when I work with management teams and I'm telling them, you know, I'm trying to build a management team, one of the things that I go after is what is called the last 10%. I'll say, you know, there's a lot of people – and management teams will give the owner the first 90%, and that's usually the easier part of the message. But that last 10% that they really don't want to talk about, that's the part that most people leave out. And so in building a management team and building trust on that team, I'll go around and I'll say, have you given me the last 10%?
Mm. Wow, that's interesting. Okay, let's talk about an unusual character for business, because I always think of him in terms of football, but Peyton Manning, you say, is a good role model for Christian business owners.
He is. He is. And it's not because he's Peyton Manning necessarily. It's because of the attitudes that he had when he was playing football. You know, I tried to find the story on this, and I wasn't able to find it yesterday. But I do know that when he landed at Denver after having been let go at Indianapolis. And mind you, Indianapolis let go a Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Yeah, I never got that either. But they
let him go. I'm a simple man.
Well, he had a couple of neck surgeries.
Oh, that's true.
I think they thought he was kind of washed up. But he arrives in Denver. You know the first thing he said to the coach?
What?
I want you to coach me.
Oh, that's so interesting.
So now here you have a multi-million dollar athlete.
Yeah, Super Bowl champion, quarterback.
MVP of the NFL.
Mm, yeah.
And what is he saying to the new guy? Coach me. You got to make me better. I want to be better.
Hmm.
You got to help me become better. And, you know, how many business owners are looking for people that will help them be better? And I would say it's probably less than 10%.
Yeah, well, I get up and drive over here in the morning and go, oh, I just want to be better at this job.
Yeah. Yeah, how many pastors have mentors because they want to be better?
Yeah.
How many nonprofit leaders have mentors because they want to be better? You know, I'm 56. I have two mentors, and I always want to be better at what I do.
Mm-hmm. All right. If you have a question for Bill English and want to give us a call right now, you can do so at 1-877-933-2484. I'll give that number again a little slowly, 1-877-933-2484. We'll take a little break when we come back more with Bill English. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. Be back in a minute. Sixteen minutes after the hour, talking to Bill English, which is what we do on Wednesdays, talking about the foundation for building a business. how Peyton Manning is actually a pretty good role model for Christian business owners because he shows up, Super Bowl quarterback, MVP, and says to his new coach, I want you to coach me.
Yeah.
And every business owner needs trusted advisors. So as a Christian business owner, who should they include on their trusted board of advisors?
Yeah, and this is not a formal board. These are just organizations and individuals that a business owner should create trusted relationships with. They should be long-term. Obviously, you're going to need a law firm, not just a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Now, this is something that I caution business owners about. Well, it always is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, advice is never cheap.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
unless you're listening to Faith Radio, and then it doesn't cost you anything,
that's
right?
True. That's right. Exactly right.
We put it out there for free. But the law firm here, you want a law firm who can help you not just with contracts and perhaps policies, but who can help you with shareholder disputes, partner disputes, HR employment law. The chances of a small business owner being sued at some point, quite high. It's in the 25 to 35 percentile.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a good law firm who can represent you.
All right. We have a caller on the studio line. Rock is calling from Minneapolis. Welcome to the show.
This is Rock.
Hi. How are you, Rock?
Am I on?
Yeah, you bet you are.
I'm doing excellent.
Awesome.
Doing excellent.
Awesome. You have a question for Bill? Yeah.
Yes. Bill, been a Christian for over 30 years, to God's glory, by his grace. Haven't had a mentor. I've always desired one, wanted one. What do you do, or how do you go about to get one? I think my thing was, what if they say no? Oh, great, you know. So I'll just listen. See what you have to
Thanks,
say.
Rock. Great question.
No, Rock, can you stay on for just a minute? Do you own a business?
Well, I do, but God's called me into ministry, and ministry's first before. But I have a business heart that also wants to do business too. So
got it. So in finding a mentor, you want to find somebody who can help you get down the road either with a particular skill set or a particular personality or character development, preferably both. So you want to look for people who are ahead of you a little bit and maybe a lot of bit. And you want to find people who are willing to invest in you. Now, I have a phrase that I live with in business. I call it, it's real simple. I'll work with those who will work with me. So not everybody that I meet in life wants to work with me. And that's that's especially true of Bill Arnold, because Bill, he has to work with me because I'm on his schedule every week. And so he, you know, he acts like this is a great thing. But, you know, in reality, Bill has a hard time with
us. Save me, Lord.
So,
sorry,
no,
I'm just
seriously,
over here praying.
I know. I'm just kidding you here. But seriously, what you want to do is find people who want to work with you and who are willing to invest in you. They need not be older than you. They just need to be more mature than you in some way.
Okay. That's great. Yeah. And just and not fear the reach. If it's a, you know, if it's a no-go, you'll find someone eventually.
God will bring the right people into your life who will hone you in the way that he wants so that you can be more effective at first knowing him and loving him, and then secondly, doing what he has called you to do.
Yes, and I have a person in mind that I just met over the weekend. If he's listening on Saturday night,
you're coming for
him. I want.
Yeah.
So I gotta do all the legwork to try to get it, but it's going to happen.
Thanks, Rock.
It's going to happen by God's way.
Yeah.
Have a great day, guys.
You too.
Thanks for calling. Rob. That's a lot of transparency and vulnerability.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, pretty cool to say I'd like a mentor, but what if they say no? That's kind of a scary thought. Who likes rejection?
Well, you know, but the way that I would develop a mentor is to go out and meet with some people and not ask them right away. I would ask them to coffee a couple times and just try to get to know them and then see if I thought there was chemistry there before I asked them.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, you don't want to just necessarily go to somebody that you don't know and say, would you be my mentor? I think you want to get to know them a little bit first before you pop the question.
Right. But what about if the mentor just has such an incredible skill set, but maybe you don't have a lot of chemistry with them, but you could still learn from them?
Then it's up to the Lord as to whether that'll actually work. Because the mentor also has to feel like there's a call there and that they want to invest in you.
Mm-hmm. Let's say I am an employee at a company, and I would like to be mentored as an employee. How do I go about that?
I would voice that if you have an HR director, I would voice that with the HR director. If you don't have that, I would voice that with my direct manager and let them know that I want to be mentored. And here are the things that I want to learn, and here's the ways that I want to grow.
Mm-hmm. All right. So as a business grows, and the owner's role is always going to be evolving, changing, taking on new dimensions. So how do you equip yourself for that?
How do I equip myself for the changing? And,
yes,
and
as an owner.
Yes. So what you have to realize is that as the business grows, your role is necessarily going to change. And so what's going to happen is that let's say that you're $500,000 today, and 5 years from now you're going to be $5 or $7 million. Your role in that business is going to be substantively different. Mm-hmm. It cannot be the same.
We're talking about the number of listeners on the morning show here.
Yes, we are.
As it grows to 7 million.
Thank
you so much.
I thought we were at 7 million already.
No, we're at like 6 million.
Are we?
Yeah,
okay.
We're so close. We're very close.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
So the board of directors, again, accountability. What happens when your board is giving you advice you don't like?
You need to take it.
But what if it's even not the best advice, and you know in your heart that
you still need to listen to it and consider it. But
so
after
they're
that,
the end all.
But it's just another data point for you, the owner, to take in, to pray through, and to see what God would have you do. But but you need advisors. You remember, with advisors, victory is sure, Proverbs says. So you need trusted advisors. You need advisors on your board of directors, and you need mentors that are speaking into your life. So you have a number of data points coming into you. You filter that through prayer with God to see what decisions you should make and what directions to take.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bill, I love how we started in Proverbs, so I'd like to wrap up our last couple of minutes with just a little bit of review, because Proverbs 24 says, "By wisdom a house is built, and through understanding it is established." What does through understanding mean to you?
Through understanding there, I think, is insight into what's actually going on, and understanding not only the processes in your business, but understanding the personalities and the emotions in your business.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think that most business owners don't get is what it's like to be at the other end of them. So the way that I phrase the question when I'm doing executive coaching is this, and I'll just use you, Bill, as an example. I would say, Bill, what do you think it's like to be at the other end of Bill Arnold?
No, awful.
And you'll immediately feel exposed, right?
Yeah.
And you'll immediately feel like you're put on the spot. But that's the point.
Okay.
Because if you don't understand how people experience you, then you're not going to have a deep understanding of how your business is coming along. Business is always about relationships as well as process. And if you don't understand how you're coming off in those relationships, it's going to be difficult for you to really establish a strong business.
Okay, Bill, through knowledge, its rooms are filled with rare and beautiful treasures. What does that mean to you?
What that means to me is that the rare and beautiful treasures are going to be the fruits of your labor, fulfilling God's purposes for your business.
Now,
we have six purposes we've outlined at the Bible in business that God has for business. And we think that those should be the measure of success.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, this applies to everybody today. The wise prevail through great power. And those who have knowledge muster their strength.
Yeah.
So if you have knowledge today, you can muster your own strength, regardless of what you're doing today.
Right. And from a business perspective, we like to think cash is a lot of power and prestige is a lot of power. But here it says your knowledge and understanding really is the source of your strength. And I think that there's some real truth there.
Mm-hmm. And the last verse in this passage, it says, "Surely you need guidance to wage war, and victory is won through many advisors."
Yeah.
And business is an all-out war out there, isn't it?
It is. It's high competition.
Yeah.
You've got to know what's going on, and you got to be good at what you do, and you got to have advisors in order for you to be successful. If you think, oh, business owner, that you're going to be successful without engaging outside advisors and a board of directors and a personal mentor, you better think again. You'll get so far, and then you're going to stagnate because you really won't have what it takes to get to the next level.
Mm-hmm. I always enjoy these conversations, Bill. You always bring so much to the table.
Thank you so much
for being here.
You bet.
Talking to Bill English from BibleAndBusiness.com. It is 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a little break, and we'll be back in just a minute. It's 31 minutes after the hour. Good morning. I hope your day is starting well. We're going to take a little news break when we come back. Very interesting special guest coming up. Gerald Dickens, we're going to talk to him. His great, great, grandfather was Charles Dickens. How cool is that? Be back in a minute. Thirty-five minutes after the hour, it can be especially difficult to think before we speak or post or tweet in our current culture. Speaker and author Karen Eamon says our words always matter, even online.
Our digital tongues are such a problem today, and you know, I'm convinced that all of the verses in the Bible that talk about how we should and shouldn't use our words, they still apply to the words that we are using online. Those are still our words. Maybe they're not coming out of our mouth. Maybe they're coming off the end of our fingertips. But when we post online or when we text someone, that can also be another place where we use our words. It's not verbally, it's with our hands, but it's still our words. And so we need to take those as seriously as we take our spoken words. So I think one thing to remember is that when we're online, we're also on stage. We might think we're just talking to that one person whose Facebook page we're on. We're just saying something to them, but we're on stage. Everybody that they're friends with can see that comment. Everybody that we're friends with can see that comment. And if someone chooses to share the original post, then even hundreds and thousands of more people can see the comment. So I think we need to remember that when we're online, we're also on stage. And yeah, we can retract something later, but who knows how many people saw it. There's no way to chase down all those people and say, oh, wait, I didn't really mean that. So it's better on the front end if we don't say it at all.
You can find the full interview at our website on myfaithradio.com. Next up, theater royalty. Gerald Dickens, the great-great-grandson of Charles Dickens. Be back in a minute.
This Friday night at the dinner table, don't miss an important lecture from Mom and Dad on your latest big mistake. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. If you invited your teen to attend a lecture every time she did something wrong, do you think she'd ever show up? Parents tend to function in nonstop correction mode. But there's nothing more destructive to your relationship with your teen than constant lecturing, nagging, and soapboxing. So today, I urge you to take the Shut Up Challenge. At the risk of sounding rude, parents need to know that they can still teach vital lessons without saying a single word. So take a step back. Give your child some space. Watch how the Shut Up Challenge can help your teen grow up.
For more great tips from Mark Gregston, go to ParentingTodaysTeens.org. ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Welcome back to Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone. Bill Arnold here. You know, basically, for many of us, in three generations, you are forgotten. Now, don't take that personally, but can you remember the name of your grandfather? Probably. But can you remember the name of your great-grandfather? And that's when it starts to get a little bit shady. Rebecca's nodding her head, probably not. But what about the name of your great-great-grandfather? That's where everybody goes away. My guest on the studio line has a great-great-grandfather that not only does he remember, but everyone listening to this right now remembers. His name is, of course, Charles Dickens. Tolstoy and Dostoevsky referred to Dickens as the great Christian writer. The French writer Jules Verne called Dickens his favorite writer, writing his novels standalone, dwarfing all others by their amazing power and felicity of expression. Van Gogh was inspired by Dickens' novels in several of his paintings, like Vincent's Chair, and in a letter to his sister in 1889 stated that reading Dickens, especially A Christmas Carol, was one of the things that kept him from committing suicide. Now, a morning radio show is never very friendly to theater people who work mostly nights. Gerald, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm learning things. I never knew the Van Gogh thing. It's amazing.
Well, yeah, you learn lots on this show. So what's it like around Christmas time when you're at a restaurant and they call out your name? Dickens for two. What do they go? Yeah, right.
Yeah, do you know, I tried the same thing in airports as well to get upgraded, and it hasn't worked yet, but I'll keep trying.
Yeah, now you're in Minneapolis to perform To Begin With, which is a play inspired by a book your great-great-grandfather Charles Dickens wrote. Now, this is not a very well-known book, but tell us about the book. What was your first experience with it?
Okay, well, the book is called The Life of Our Lord, and Dickens wrote it in 1847 specifically for his children. He wanted to teach them about the life of Jesus Christ
in a way that he knew they would understand, in a way that was not encumbered by any specific organization or creed. He just wanted to lay out the facts as simply as he could in a wonderful little story told as if he was sitting by their bedside at night recounting the story. So it's a beautiful little book. And the reason a lot of people don't know it is because at the time he said that it was not going to be for publication. It was only as a written account for his children. And that's the basis of this show to begin with, is actually Dickens going through the process of writing The Life of Our Lord and what inspired him to do it and why he did it and how he did it and the memories and the perceptions of his own life that rose up within him while he was writing it.
Mm-hmm. So he really didn't want this to be published. Now, the play that you're in Minneapolis performing called To Begin With is not based on the book. It's inspired by the book. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It's really about Dickens creating the book and trying to imagine what led him to write it and the process he went through to create it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you do many other performances of your great-great-grandfather's works. Now, obviously, you must feel a great responsibility to represent him authentically. Do you think that his faith shows well through in this book, in this piece?
Oh, absolutely. And in all of his works. I mean, if you think of A Christmas Carol, is there ever a better tale of redemption?
No, there isn't.
you can't go too far wrong.
Yeah.
Read A Christmas Carol, you've got all you need to know about Dickens' faith. Yes, within this book. I mean, it's so simply told, which is why we're not doing a dramatization of the book itself, because it really is just a recounting of the Gospels in a very, very simplified way. So it just to recite the book wouldn't bring anything new to the table in particular. But yes, it very much shows exactly what he wanted his children to know, laying out a very good set of rules. If you follow these rules, you're not going to go far wrong, is kind of the background to the book.
Uh-huh. Now, obviously, you have inherited some of your great-great-grandfather's talent for writing, performing. Which is really quite a compliment, of course. And when you get on stage to do this piece, what's going through your mind?
Well, you know, this is interesting because this is one of the only pieces I perform where I am actually Dickens.
Yeah.
Most of the other shows are based on the novels, A Christmas Carol, Nicholas Nickleby, Great Expectations, some of the short stories he wrote. So within those, I am either a narrator or taking on the individual characters within the plot.
Mm-hmm.
This one is fascinating because being Dickens, getting into his mind, reliving his path, he had a very difficult upbringing, a very difficult childhood. His parents were imprisoned for debt, and he was sent out to work in a rat-infested, squalid factory to raise money to save the family, really. So all of these memories and influences are coming through him within this piece. And yes, through the process of rehearsing it, I feel very much closer to Dickens than in the other performances where I'm just doing the book themselves.
Mm-hmm. I love it the way you refer to him as Dickens. It's like...
Well, he's such a great entity. I mean, it's almost too much to imagine him as my grandfather's grandfather, which is what he was. I mean, he is Dickens. Like
no.
Shakespeare or Chaucer. Or...
Now, did you have to read his books in school like everybody else? Did you ever hear the teacher saying, Dickens?
Hated them.
Did you ever
hear? We had to study Oliver Twist when I was, I don't know, 14 or 15 years old. And the teacher at the beginning of that year's studies stood at the top of the class and said, this year we're going to study Oliver Twist. You will like it. It is a classic. And what better way to put a student off? And then she said, and it was written by Dickens's great-great-grandfather, and every eye in the room bored down to me in sheer hatred.
It's funny.
Just studying the books, I didn't like them at all at school. What changed my perception was theater. I'd always loved theater. I'd always been a performer since the age of 9 when I made my debut in a nativity play. And when I discovered that Dickens's passion was theater and he loved to act, then suddenly his books began to make sense because they read like screenplays or scripts. They were wonderful, and his characters were so theatrical and larger than life. So that's when the big change took place for me.
Mm-hmm. I just wondered if a teacher ever said to you, Dickens, quit clowning around and read your Dickens book.
And they gave up on me.
I figured. All right, Gerald, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, more with Gerald Charles Dickens, the great-great-grandson of Charles Dickens. Be right back. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I have the absolute delight of talking to Gerald Dickens. He's on our studio line. He's in Minneapolis performing. Now, talk about the adaptation of the piece that your great-great-grandfather wrote, The Life of Our Lord. It's been inspired. The piece has been inspired by that, written by Jeffrey Hatcher. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. A well-known playwright in the Twin Cities. The producer of the play, Dennis Babcock from the Daniel Group, he has had this dream of doing something based on the life of our Lord for years. He's been talking to me about it for, I don't know, 15 years, something like that. And there was always a struggle on how to perform it. So in the end, he took Jeffrey to the United Kingdom, and they just did a tour of Dickens' sites and where Dickens was at the time he was writing The Life of Our Lord. And suddenly the idea came to him that Dickens is taking his summer vacation on the Isle of Wight in the south of England, just off the south coast of England, and there runs into the little firebrand 12-year-old called Algernon Swinburne, who would go on to be a very famous poet in his own right, but who was had very strong opinions and was not afraid to share them. So Jeffrey came up with the idea, why not have Dickens meet this child, and they have a confrontation in a churchyard, and Swinburne is criticizing Dickens, and that makes Dickens think, why is this child so like this? Why does he dismiss the Gospels? Why does he not learn his Christian lessons? Why is he criticizing me for writing what I do? And that was the key that we were all looking for, and that's where the play sprang up from. So it's been a long, long process, but we've arrived at a great story.
Yeah. Now, what kind of preparation do you go through as far as makeup to look like your great-great-grandfather? I mean, did he have the big mutton chops and the big messy hair?
I've got the beard growing here now. I've been cultivating this for about 3 months now, so I've got the Dickens beard, which is hanging there. Sadly, the Dickens flowing, curling locks I do not possess. So we've had a wig made up at the Guthrie Theatre in Minneapolis. They've done a fantastic job in looking at portraits and photographs of Dickens and creating a very, very authentic hairpiece, which is extraordinary when I'm sat in front of a mirror and that goes on, and then suddenly there is a man I know very well looking back at me.
That's fantastic. So it is a one-act performance?
It's a one-act, 90-minute show, one-act play, and it's all set there on the Isle of Wight in Dickens's holiday home. There's a lot of great factual, there's a lot of correct pieces in it from what Jeffrey's discovered through his research, and it's a great journey. And the venue we're performing it in is a fantastic historic church right in downtown Minneapolis. So that lends it a great atmosphere and really backs up the story we're telling.
Mm-hmm. And what is the name of the venue?
It's called the Old Wesley Center.
Okay. And to obviously Center. To learn more about this amazing show, you can go to tobeginwith.org. I say that right? Tobeginwith.org.
You absolutely did. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, before we sign off here, I want to ask you, because I know you're away from your family because you're here in the States performing this, and I know you live in London, right?
Well, I'm a little outside London, near Oxford. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious because now you were here while all that was going on in London last week with the terrorist attack. I'm just curious to get your insider's feeling as how it is to be here with your family there and everything that was going on. What is your take on all that?
Well, you know, I mean, I wasn't worried about my family because, as I say, we're a little outside. But, you know, when you see news like that coming from your own country, it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a personal attack. I mean, I'm sure Americans abroad through 9/11 felt the same. It's not just an awful bit of news. It is a personal attack against your home, your faith, your way of life, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it was horrible to watch. But even more than that, on this occasion, I then discovered in the days immediately after the attack that I had been at school with the terrorist.
Oh, wow.
He was in my school a year younger than me, but I knew him well.
Oh, my.
And that was a shock, that there was no sign of it then. So suddenly, from watching a news broadcast of the Houses of Parliament and Big Ben, suddenly there I was, back at school in 1976 or whatever it was, remembering this kid.
Wow.
Terrifying. And that really brought it close.
Oh, my.
That really made it real.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I have a feeling my classmates are going to one day be saying that about me. Yeah, he seemed normal back then, but look at him now. All right, Gerald, as we point towards Easter, I think the show runs up until the 15th. Is that right?
We close on the 15th, yeah.
And
yeah, it's Saturday, Easter Saturday, yeah. The Easter weekend, yeah.
It's a great time to have these conversations and to talk about faith and what's important. And we're just so glad that you're here in Minneapolis. And if you're in the area, you're definitely going to want to check that out. The website is 2beginwith.org. You can go learn all kinds of information about tickets and showtimes. Gerald, thanks so much for being on the show.
Bill, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. We'll be back in just a minute.
Do you know what your child's apps are capable of? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. From iPhones to iPads, laptops to video games, it seems like our kids are never short on entertainment. But even with our kids spending more and more time using technology, our job as parents remains the same: to guard our children's hearts and minds. Knowing what apps your child uses is key, as well as knowing what those apps are capable of. Here are four of the top apps kids are using. First, there's Instagram. Sharing photos is a wonderful way to stay connected with family and friends, but be sure your child's account is set on private to avoid unfiltered messages. Second, Luminosity is a great app to exercise your mind with brain teasers. Remember, your family first.
Want to connect with Mark on Twitter? Follow him at twitter.com/MarkMerrill. The Family Minute with Mark Merrill, helping families love well.
Good morning. It's 56 minutes after the hour. President Trump believes lawmakers from both sides of the aisle will come together for a deal on health care. Speaking at a dinner with senators, Trump said he hopes Democrats and Republicans can work together because both sides have the same goals of making the country better. And now for more additional comedy. There's a guy in Kansas City who donated 32 gallons of blood over 64 years. 32 gallons of blood. I bet I have donated at least half of that, but mostly from shaving in the morning. But that is a pretty cool thing. Over 100,000 people have signed a petition telling First Lady Melania Trump to move into the White House or pay for security at Trump Tower herself. There's playing hardball, huh?
I didn't know that was an option. I kind of figured if you are where you, like, you pay for your own security. If there's one thing I know in this life is that
that's what I thought too.
You pay for your own security.
And I can't help but to talk about this story one more time. This 12-year-old boy from Alaska is celebrating a dubious honor. Connor Slocum has taken top honors at the annual Rotten Sneaker Contest. He defeated contestants from across the country who brought their foulest-smelling footwear to Times Square in New York.
Oh, who came up with that as a contest?
I don't know.
Who thought, we are so bored, we have nothing else to do, I want to see how bad these shoes can actually smell.
And you put a whole bunch of them together?
Oh, no. I wouldn't know.
It's like New York stinks enough. Don't bring them all to New York, for crying out loud. All right, that wraps up Faith Radio Mornings today. This is Bill Arnold. I'll be here tomorrow. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.